Hey, this is Jack Mangan, a.k.a. that author guy, fellow, whatever. And you're listening to Spherical Tomy, written and read by Jack Mangan. That's me.
Excuse me, Jack. What are you doing?
I'm introducing my podcast.
Jack, Spherical Tomy was completed a few years ago. This is my podcast novel, Billy Barbarian.
Not Spherical Billy? Ugh, what the hell am I doing here, then? All right, I'm out of here.
You're listening to The Continuing Adventures of Billy Barbarian, written and read by J.R. Murdoch. For more information, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com or jrmurdoch.com. Billy still didn't enjoy the taxi ride, convinced taxi drivers were suicidal and had little, if any, regard for their passenger safety. The dizzying blur of the city and its occupants passing by finally stopped, and Billy was thankful once again to find his feet on solid ground. This time, just as when he'd been deposited in front of Stump Tower, he found himself in complete awe. Back in the north, he'd seen a fighting arena. Barbarians were famous for them. They consisted of a large hole dug in the ground that people could gather around and look into and watch two or more combatants fight it out. Some were decorated, some were plain, but all were underground. The fanciest ones were covered with a makeshift building to ensure the observers were kept dry should it happen to rain. This differed as much from those holes as Stump Tower differed from Billy's hovel back home. This was a wonder without rival. He was certain of that. A wooden tunnel led to where the field should be, but it looked to drop off. At least part of this grand stadium lay below ground, something familiar in a strange place. Even more, the structure rose high and wide, expanding upward and outward. Billy leaned far back to look up. Row after row of stairs, walkways, and supports, all constructed out of wood, rose into the air. Billy felt his knees shake as he looked up and vertigo overtook him. "Easy there, big fella." Jack grabbed Billy's elbow to help him keep his balance.
"It's so big."
"It'll seat 40,000 during a game, and right now it'll hold 70,000 for a concert." A large number of that 70,000 poured into the stadium as the three stood on the main street, waiting for Billy to stop gaping and start moving. More than one passerby jostled Billy, but he didn't let this deter him from standing and staring. Billy didn't fail to notice three men in black robes who were offering people peace.
"We go,"
Fat said, his annoyance easily detected above the din of the crowd. Jack gave Billy a gentle nudge. The three headed to a side entrance, through a tall fence with a sign posted on it. A guard, not a city guard as he was wearing all black, there were many colorful guards around though, and looked very displeased that the three were there, pointed to the sign and said,
"Authorized personnel only."
Billy assumed that's what the sign said. Fat held up his badge. The guard's eyes scrutinized the badge.
"I was told to expect you. Is he the one?" the guard asked, pointing at Billy.
"Yes,"
Fat said with a sorrowful sigh.
"Big guy, isn't he?"
"We go,"
Fat said and pushed his way past the guard. The guard allowed all three to pass by.
"Jack," Billy whispered to Jack, "what are we here to do? Iman said you knew." "Shh! Just don't say his name. And we're here to protect Celine. He told you that. On the side of the stadium is the heiress where we'll be meeting her."
"But the way he said it, it sounded like there was more to this."
Jack stopped and pulled Billy's elbow, causing the barbarian to turn around and face him.
"Billy, I don't ask questions, see? I just do as I'm told, and I get paid well to do so. I'm not smart enough to make decisions. I'm just one person. If we do as we're told, we'll make a lot of money tonight. Understand?"
Billy straightened up and looked down at Jack. He understood. He just didn't understand one thing.
"Why is money so important to you?"
"Money makes the world go round."
"No, it doesn't. I've almost never had any money, and the world keeps going around for me."
"Look, it's a figure of speech, a saying. My world is here in Sethopolis. For me to survive, I need to have money. The more I have, the more things I can buy. If this night plays out, I'll finally have enough money to build my own place like Fat did."
"Fat owns Pang Hao?"
"Yes. Well, he did. And I want to own my own place, so I don't have to do things like this anymore."
"So if Fat owns his own place, why does he keep working and doing stuff like this?"
"I don't think he has a choice. I think he made a bad deal with the developer of his place and owes a lot of money, so he works these side jobs just to pay it off.
Where do you keep all this money?
In the bank. That's not important right now. What is important? What are you two doing? Come on, Billy. No more questions. Fat is waiting and we have a job to do.
Billy had grown up with the most urgent need of his life being finding food to eat. He'd never had any pressing business or need for money. Here in the city, life played out differently. Every time he turned around or asked a question, things felt rushed. People raced about and didn't take the time to just sit and talk and ask questions. He started to get the feeling that his questions were starting to get on people's nerves. Perhaps he'd have to curb his appetite for knowledge until he had free time and wasn't working. Fat stood at the edge of a large clearing emblazoned with the Stump insignia.
Why is Stump's symbol there?
He owns stadium. Now be quiet. I need think.
Fat snapped at Billy.
About what? The job? Is there more to it than just protecting Celine? I have a feeling there is more to this job.
Fat turned and looked up at Billy.
You big. You strong. I'm sure. I small. I quick. If you no be quiet, I will kill you. Do not speak to me. I will speak to you when you need to do something. Until that time, you be quiet. Just stand and be quiet. That all.
Fat turned around. Billy worried about Fat. The small man's face had turned a dark purple, and he breathed as if he'd just run across the plains of desperation. He opened his mouth to say something. Jack kicked him. Perhaps it'd be best if he stayed quiet. He contented himself to survey the area. The high walls around the arras had only one entrance. Behind them, the stadium rose into the sky. Billy paused for a moment to follow it upward. Then he saw it. In all his years, he'd never thought he'd really see one, but there it flew, over the stadium and coming in their direction. Fast.
Get down!
Billy dove to the ground. Jack looked confused by Billy's reaction. Fat ignored them both. A dragon descended out of the sky to the clearing where they waited. Four huge clawed feet, red scales, round belly, and black wings that spanned nearly the width of the stadium. It could have landed in the stadium had it not been for the fact that people were filling it to capacity. Billy had only ever heard about dragons. In the old days, dragons were common and wild. They would eat livestock and terrorize villages. Nowadays, they were used in stories to scare little children to keep them inside after dark and, as Billy just found out, used as air transportation. Billy got to his feet and dusted himself off.
That's a dragon!
Fat just gave an annoyed glare and returned his attention to the landing dragon. Torch spots, movable mirrors reflecting light from dozens of torches, pointed on the landing dragon. The beast spanned nearly 90 feet from the tip of its horned head to the end of its lumpy tail. The polished scales reflected the light from the torch spots in a brilliant display of raining light that shifted and danced about as the dragon descended. It landed with a dull thud that shook the ground and sent up a small cloud of dust. Billy coughed. When the dust cleared, Billy realized how loud the dragon had been. He could now hear the screams of the crowd just beyond the fence. People were sitting on others' shoulders and trying to peek over the fence for a glimpse at Celine. Billy's heart pounded both with anticipation and trepidation. He'd known about Celine since he was a boy, but he'd never gotten the chance to meet her. His mother had gone to school with Celine's mom before the lady took Celine south to Sethopolis, and Billy's mom related many of such stories to Billy. Billy wondered if Celine's mother might remember his mother. He suddenly wished he had a picture of his mom. The dragon carried a small cabin on its back. At least, this is what it looked like to Billy. A series of logs stacked and lashed together with rope bindings. He had expected something much nicer than this, though. The dragon spread out its legs and tucked its wings into its side. Then it tilted slightly, and a staircase rolled out from the doorway of the cabin. Billy realized his mouth hung open and promptly shut it. When the door opened, a noticeable hush emanated from the throngs of people pushing against the fence. Billy thought he'd gone deaf for an instant, but returned his full attention to the opening doorway. He wondered if only he noticed the door took a painfully long time to open. Finally, the door did open. He had expected a beautiful woman to step out, but instead a man stepped out. If you could call what came out the door a man. It, or he, was 7 feet tall if an inch. Every square meter of him covered in brown scales, as well as tight-fitting khaki pants, but no shirt. He wore dark sunglasses, even though the sun had already gone down. The teeth in his mouth protruded in varying directions and looked painful. Billy wondered how the man ate. It, he, whatever, stepped down the stairs, not looking from side to side as if nothing deserved his attention.
Billy couldn't resist the urge to blurt out, "Who's he?" Jack hissed.
"Celine's agent."
"What's an agent?"
"Be quiet,"
Fat demanded. Billy held his tongue and closed his mouth. Until the next person departed, he thought his heart would explode. The beautiful woman wore all white. From her tights tucked into her furry boots to her fur-lined, tight-fitting shirt, to the floppy hat on her blonde-haired head, everything was white and blinding as sunlight. She also wore dark sunglasses. Billy realized that the torch spots were on the two, and very likely the reason they were wearing sunglasses. As soon as the woman appeared, Billy thought something exploded. A wave of noise grew to impossibly loud. The man-it-thing didn't flinch, but the woman turned as if on cue and waved to the seething mass of people just visible beyond the fence.
"She come! Be ready!"
Fat shouted.
"I go first with Smith. You follow after."
Billy stared at Celine.
"Billy!"
Fat shouted. Billy nodded dumbly. The one who Fat called Smith moved quickly. Once he strode closer, Billy could see that the man-thing stood only slightly bigger in size than himself. This made him feel slightly more confident. Fat turned, and he and Smith turned and headed into the stairwell. As soon as they were out of the way, Billy got his first close-up look at Celine. She couldn't have been over 5 feet tall. Her narrow face with a perfect smile and white teeth enamored Billy. He couldn't recall ever seeing a more perfect smile on a person. She walked quickly for someone so short. If Jack hadn't punched Billy in the arm, he would have been left behind. Billy fell into step behind the procession. His mother would have been so proud. His first day in Sethopolis, and he had a job. Not just any job, but a job guarding the beloved Celine. He had to get a letter home as soon as possible. He wished his mother had an orb like the one he had in his pocket, so he could just call her. He wondered who he could get to write a letter for him. Perhaps Jack knew how to write. He knew how to read. He focused his attention on the task and followed everyone down the stairs. Jack, who walked at Billy's side, reached back to close the door. As they all entered the stairwell, Billy gave a glance back and saw that one more man exited the dragon's cabin.
"Hold on," Billy said and held the door open.
"What is it?"
"There's someone else getting off the dragon."
Jack looked under Billy's arm. The man wore a clean white shirt and black pants. With one hand, he shaded his face from the light as he descended the stairs. In his other hand, he held what Billy thought looked like a black blanket. The man's gaze shifted from side to side, trying to take in the mass of confusion.
"That's just the pilot."
Billy looked down at Jack for clarification.
"The person who flies the dragon."
"Oh."
Billy closed the door, and he and Jack rushed down the dark stairs to catch up with the rest of the group. Billy fell in place behind Jack at the bottom of the stairs. Celine, though short, moved at a brisk pace. Billy smiled as he watched her hips swing from side to side. The wood of the staircase ended halfway down and became natural stone like the rest of the narrow corridor. Doors lined the walls. Most sat open, and Billy took a brief moment to look into each one. Some were simply supply closets for costumes and clothes, others held large props, and still others had stars upon the doors, but were locked. He assumed these were for the rest of Celine's band, the Great Poupons. The last door, near the end of the corridor, and next to another flight of stairs leading up, had a large golden star with the name Celine on it. Billy impressed himself for having recognized all those letters, the stump insignia stamped below her name. Billy leaned in close to Jack and whispered,
"Why is Stump symbol on the door?"
"He's sponsoring the concert."
"Huh?"
"He's the one who put up the money to reserve the stadium, and he's the one who'll pay Celine to perform."
"Oh. Why?"
"Things like this cost a lot of money. Stump put up the money, but he also collects his share from the tickets sold, as well as parking, concessions, and merchandise sold."
"What's merchandise?"
"Products with Celine's name and picture on them."
Billy nodded his head. His attention had been distracted. Celine's agent unlocked the door. Billy still wanted to know the agent's name, but beyond that, he wanted to know what he could be. Whatever race or species, he had no problem opening the door. A long rack of outfits sat along one wall, and a huge mirror bordered in hundreds of tiny candles hung on the opposite wall. The huge room, though smaller than Iman's place, rivaled Billy's family home back in the north. Dozens of small bottles, filled with a clear liquid that Billy assumed to be water, sat in neat rows upon a table at the back wall. Each bottle had the name Stump in gold letters on a black background. Billy had the name pointed out to him enough that he now recognized it on sight. He smiled. Two names he recognized in one day. Next to the rows of bottles on the table, food had been spread. More food than Billy had ever seen in one place at one time. Oh, Billy had eaten some large meals before, and he'd been to feasts before, but this, there was enough food on the 20-foot-long table to feed half the army of the North, no doubt about that. Billy felt his stomach rumble and wanted to lunge at the table. He licked his lips, glanced at the back of Fat's head, and decided it'd be best if he didn't do that right now. There would be time to eat later. The entire group made its way into the room. Celine turned on her heels, snapped off her sunglasses, and looked at Fat, Jack, and Billy with a glare that could melt steel. All Billy could notice was her ice-blue eyes.
What are they doing here?
Her agent turned and addressed Fat.
I'm Phil Smith, Celine's agent.
His voice deep and resonant as he spoke.
I must ask what the three of you are here for.
Fat spoke quickly and professionally.
We here as personal security. There was threat made earlier that someone would try to kill Miss Dijon, and we here make sure no happen.
Fat bowed his head in respect.
I don't care what you're here for. I want to know what you're doing in my dressing room. Get out!
Billy didn't need any more prompting. He nearly knocked Jack and Fat to the ground in a hurry to exit the room. Fat held up a hand.
We have instruction. We no leave Miss Dijon's side.
Fat's tone eerily unnerving. Billy froze and waited for Celine's response. It wasn't Celine that responded, but her agent.
Miss Celine requires privacy. This room is deep underground, with no other exits apart from that one.
Phil pointed to the door they'd all come through.
The three of you can stand out there while she prepares for the concert. The door will remain unlocked, and should you hear anything out of the ordinary, you can come right in.
After they knock, I don't care what happens. They have to knock first.
Celine's tone denoted her bitterness, but Billy again found himself lost in her eyes. A silly smile crossed his face as her voice tickled his ears.
And tell the big one to stop gawking.
Her words stung. The three took their cue and exited the room. As they did, several people rushed in. Billy clenched his fists, preparing for a fight, but Fat brushed him aside. Billy allowed himself to relax, and the people went over and started attending to Celine.
Hair and makeup, Jack said, preventing Billy from asking.
Oh. Once the door closed, Fat turned to Billy.
You!
Me?
You go up there!
Fat pointed up the stairs.
You look around for a bit. Make sure nobody there that don't belong there. I need Dr. Jack.
Billy had trouble reading Fat's tone. Unless mistaken, Fat just wanted Billy out of the way. Suddenly he felt in the way. A third wheel. Just getting in the way. Again. He turned and started up the steps.
I guess I'll see you guys later.
I call when you need come back down. Do not come back until I call.
Okay.
Billy's shoulders slumped and he made his way up the stairs. Suddenly, for the first time since he'd left home, his pack felt heavy. His feet felt heavy. His body felt heavy. He didn't like leaving from the job he'd been given. He only wanted to come down south to the big city and perhaps make a name for himself. All that seemed in jeopardy now. At the top of the stairs, Billy paused and took a deep breath. He could hear the constant murmur of the crowd. Now he knew why the dressing room lay underground. Not only did it keep Celine out of sight, but it protected her from the sound of the crowd. He wondered where he stood in regards to the stadium, but from the buzz of activity it became suddenly apparent. He was backstage. Men in yellow shirts ran everywhere, carrying musical instruments, bags, and costumes. Twice Billy nearly got trampled by a group of workers. He decided to go closer to the stage and try to keep out of the way.
Who are you? A short, balding man with large forearms and stumpy legs, also wearing a yellow shirt like the other stagehands, blurted at Billy.
I'm Billy. What are you doing backstage?
Looking for danger.
From what?
Anything?
Who sent you here?
Iman?
Who?
Billy held up his badge. The man's demeanor changed instantly.
Oh, you're the private security. You can never be too careful with events like this. We get fans trying to get backstage all the time. It's good to know you're on our side.
Which side is that?
We're all here to make sure a good show is put on.
Oh. Billy felt happy to be part of everything that would result in a good show, even if he still wasn't certain what a good show would entail.
I'm Steve Jameson, Billy. I'm the general manager.
I'm Billy Barbarian. This is my first time in Sethopolis. This is my first job, too.
Steve sized up Billy with a long, careful glance.
Well, you're a big guy, and security always needs good, strong men like you. Why don't you join me in my rounds? I can show you all around the stage so you'll know the ins and outs of the place.
That sounds like exactly what I need to be doing.
Fat Cow wanted me to take a walk around and look for danger.
Billy joined Steve in making the rounds. Steve happily answered all of Billy's nearly endless questions. The man knew everything about what went on backstage.
Billy found out all about lighting, sound equipment, and special effects. Nearly everything had been stamped with either Iman or Stump. Billy remembered that Jack had said not to say anything, but he had already mentioned to Steve that Iman hired him. Steve took great pains to explain to Billy how many of the items were used, how they worked, and explained in one simple word, magic. Billy thought of the orb Iman had given him. He placed his hand into his pocket and almost pulled it out. Iman's word about beta testing and not showing it to anyone resounded in his head, and he slowly pulled his hand back out of his pocket.
So, how does this stage get put together so quickly? Billy asked.
Now that's something quite amazing. Come over here.
Billy followed Steve around to the back of the stage. The entire underneath of the stage was boarded up and hidden from view. Billy thought to ask why, but Steve started talking.
This is a secret that not too many people know. I designed this stage myself. See this pin here?
Steve pointed up to a massive wooden pin.
When this pin is pulled out, the entire stage folds up. No magic here, just plain old engineering. Once it's folded up, we've got us four dragons that lifted into the air and out of here. This is a thing of beauty.
Billy, for once in his life, had nothing to say. The pin rose nearly 10 feet with an eyelet 2 feet around at the top. Billy assumed someone very strong would be needed to pull that pin out. He wondered if he would be strong enough to do just that. As he wondered, he felt a buzzing in his pocket, followed by the ringing of bells.
What's that?
Steve said, his attention pulled from the pin.
It's... well... Billy flushed. I got to go back to work now. Thank you for taking me on a tour around your backstage. It was really kind of you.
Billy turned and ran off, trying to find a spot to hide for a moment so he could answer the orb that tickled his leg. He ducked into the shadows and pulled the glowing orb from his pocket.
How does this thing work again? Billy asked out loud.
Billy, this is Jack, the orb said.
Jack! Hey, this is really neat!
Yes, it is.
Jack didn't sound enthusiastic. He must have been used to using magic.
We need you back here. Iman will be here shortly and he wants to talk to all of us.
I'm on my way.
Billy pocketed his orb and stepped out of the shadows. He looked around to regain his bearings. He walked up a small flight of stairs and found himself on stage, behind the curtain. He felt a little overwhelmed, knowing that just behind that curtain thousands of people sat waiting for Celine. Curiosity got the best of him, and he poked his head under the curtain to look. He wasn't prepared for the mass of people, lit by hundreds of torches and fireballs. People still milled about, trying to find their seats. A smile crossed his face, that he was part of this. Very few people would know that, but he knew it, and he could tell his mom all about it. That was enough for him. Just before he pulled his head back under the curtain, his gaze turned upward. High in the sky, he saw a second dragon. He'd seen one, so this second was not quite as much of a shock, but still a shock. In fact, the shock proved quite different. This dragon shone as gold gets. On its stomach were the same black letters he'd been seeing all day. Stump.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to The Continuing Adventures of Billy Barbarian. For more information on this book and its author, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com or jrmurdock.com. And again, thank you for listening.